How scared or worried were you, right, when you were like, I'm turning down this job, is this the right thing? How much did you question it versus how much were you like, this is what I know I need to be doing?
2 weeks before graduation, my visa's about to run out, no idea what to do. You know, I think sometimes good or bad, it takes someone to give you a bit of a nudge.
I want to talk a little bit more about CareerOS, why this versus something like LinkedIn.
When we were talking about coming on and joining, did you send me a LinkedIn or did you send me an email?
Probably send you an email.
Why?
It's more personal. How much of CareerOS today would you say is exactly how you envisioned it back on day one?
We're doing something new. We're a bit crazy. We would love to be a development, partnership with you guys. Hey, you know there's a pain here. If you give us feedback, we're going to take it and we're going to continue making something powerful. And we really did that.
Episode 9 of the Roads and Riches podcast. Today we have on Marcus Castro, the co-founder of CareerOS, the career execution platform and the number one student networking platform. Marcus was an investment banker, got his MBA, and upon leaving his MBA, had a phenomenal, high-paying, six-figure job waiting for him at Amazon, and decided to turn that down to become a tech founder and take the entrepreneurial route. So today we're going to hear all about Marcus's journey and a lot about what they're building at CareerOS. So super excited for today's episode. Hope you enjoy it. Here's the pod.
All right, we're live.
How's it going?
Marcus, thanks for joining, man.
Of course, man. It's been a while. Good to see you.
It's been a while. We tried to do the podcast thing, a few months ago, I guess toward the beginning of the year. Mutual friend connecting us.
Well, I got to say I'm happy because at least one of us continued with it. So it's good to see that at least someone is coming to life. So
it's not like any of us are busy,
Yeah, yeah. But more power. I think it's great that you've been diving into it and having some really cool and interesting conversations. So excited to be able to join in for it as well.
Yeah, for sure. No, I appreciate it. Well, let's start with what you're doing right now, man. So co-founder CareerOS, why don't you tell us a little bit about what you're building and the platform?
Yeah, great. So as you know, I'm originally from Alabama. I had a career in investment banking as well as a bit in the restaurant industry too with a handful of restaurants or so. Ended up moving to Barcelona for my MBA. And actually, this is where the CareerOS journey starts. That's why I mentioned it. So of course, like many students that move across the world, you have the next career path on your mind, right? And what I noticed as a student is a few things. And one was that technology AI has pushed students to job boards. And now a successful career a lot of times looks like clicking quick apply as many times as you can, right? And I realized that, of course, it's not so easy, right? That it actually takes, on the other side, a really quality approach of relationships, right? But I found it to be very ironic that a lot of the best institutions in the world really preached relationship building, but then they were using tools like job boards. So all in, we said there should be something better for students. And so we actually said, can we actually create something that helps guide students to build relationships with people, whether it's alumni, directly with hiring managers. And we saw this as the heart of the sort of career journey. So that being said, we started it about 18 months or so ago. From there, just about 6-7 amazing universities like ISADE here in Barcelona where I went, HSE in Paris, BAU, University of Maryland, Texas A&M in the US. So some really great higher education institutions. Now we'll have about 35, right? From Portugal to Spain to Italy to Denmark to the UK to Ireland to US. And some great ones like Georgetown will be coming on, Berkeley, to Bocconi here in Italy, to Cattolica Lisbon, to Oxford. So some really great universities now. So we're really excited to be able to partner with some really, really great universities now, sort of as a second phase in growth and so on.
So what was it about your journey? What you were focusing on or what you were doing, that pivotal point in time in your life where like you realized this was kind of like a problem and this was something that I wanted to wedge myself into?
Well, Paulo, it's funny because I think sometimes things in life happen without you realizing when they're going to happen. And so for me, I think the pivotal point for me in starting this journey was I'm about to graduate from my MBA. I was about to take a pretty high six-figure position with Amazon back in Seattle. So really going the opposite route that I was planning on doing. So 2 weeks before graduation, I said, you know what? I'm going to go to Berlin. There's a study tour to meet with startups, venture capital space. Let me just see. Maybe there's something that pops up and things happen, right? So I go there. It was an amazing week. I happened to hit it off really well with already one of my professors that I knew well. But we continued to hit it off really well there in Berlin. And man, it's crazy how things work out. The last night, his name is Jan Brueckmann. The last night in Berlin, after a few beers, he looks at me and says, Marcus, you call Amazon Amazon tomorrow and you turn them down, I promise I'm in to help you figure the rest out. Because you're meant to do more. You're not meant to go back to the corporate. You're meant to build something. And I said, you know what? Let's do it, right? I cheered him. The next morning, I called Amazon and I was out, right? 2 weeks before graduation, my visa's about to run out. No idea what to do. And everything worked out. I ended up joining a startup that he invested with here in Barcelona. I was just there for 8 months because I knew at the time it was really to learn and to ultimately start my own thing. So that, I think that for me was one of those like moments where you don't expect and then it turns into something, you know, where we are today.
What did you feel when, like, how scared or worried were you, right? When you were like, I'm turning down this job. Is this the right thing? How much did you question it versus how much were you like, this is what I know I need to be doing?
You know, it's funny. I think at the moment I just knew, and I said, I didn't even second guess it. I knew what I was there for. I knew what I was coming after. And, you know, I think sometimes good or bad, it takes someone to give you a bit of a nudge sometimes. So maybe someone like in this case, I really respected him and I said, you know what? Maybe he's right. What am I doing? And I think that was enough to push me to say, let's go do it. But, you know, I didn't really hesitate. I knew that I didn't necessarily want to do the role I was going to be doing. I'm going back into like the mega corporate world. And so I think in the grand scheme, I said, you know what? I know I'll figure it out. Sort of betting on myself, betting on confidence, and just said, let's do it.
There's something about liquid courage too, you know, I swear. The things it makes you do.
You know, sometimes that gets a little encouragement for just yeah. From that. Yeah.
All right. So I want to talk a little bit more about CareerOS. So it's the career execution platform, right? Like that's kind of the whole deal. So how does it differ from something like LinkedIn, right? Yep. Like LinkedIn's this social platform that was built for, say, business networking in general. So Maybe tell us a little bit about like, how does it differ from that? And do you ever get people that are like, okay, well, why this versus something like LinkedIn?
No, that's a great question. So I'll ask you. So when we were talking about now, you know, coming on and joining, did you send me a LinkedIn or did you send me an email?
Probably send you an email.
Yeah. Why?
It's more personable.
Right. And I'm going to see it. I'm probably going to for sure respond.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
And I see this from a lot of ways, right? When it comes to this, I think there's different means of communication, right? So one of the things we do with CareerOS is we integrate on top of LinkedIn. So we bring your messaging in. We also integrate with email as well. So we really try to nudge students from all different areas to build relationships. So it's not just through LinkedIn. We actually work on top of LinkedIn, right? So we really try to nudge in different areas. And not only that, but I think sometimes too, I think probably, for example, you're a great networker. You know how to build relationships pretty well, right? But now go back 10 years ago when you're a student, you might not even know. So one is, I think for a lot of students, opening up LinkedIn or opening an email, they don't really know what to send or how to send or when to follow up, right? So we really try to give this sort of playbook for the student, and we give the insights to the career team at the universities to better actually coach the students on what to do. But we try to use the software to also coach. Hey, you sent a LinkedIn connection to Pablo. He didn't respond back to you. Well, guess what? Here's his email. You should follow up with email. And you're gonna have a 10 times higher chance of responding, getting a response back. So we actually try to educate around this with the software.
So let me ask you this. Who is your, we'll call it customer from a business model perspective, right? Yeah. Like, is it the students? Is it the universities? Is it the businesses? Because this is, I think, pretty valuable too, to, you know, Organizations, you know, across, obviously the recruiting, you know, world is big. And, you know, I only imagine how much, you know, millions of revenue, you know, is done there. So, you know, it sounds like this is something that is valuable in, you know, different verticals and to different users. So who is the end user here? Who is your business model, I would say, geared toward?
Yeah, so it's a great question. So we really look at the universities. So for example, ESMT Berlin was actually our first customer and they were the customer, right? So we sell to the universities themselves, right? And then they get access to the students, right? So let's say, although you're graduating from, you know, XYZ school, they don't have CareerOS, well, you can't access it, right? We're really exclusive only to the universities we work with. And that is actually our customers, paying customers is the universities themselves.
Got it. Okay. For the university, their benefit is, one, they're going to have more folks that are graduating that are going to be going on to getting jobs, right? Which that's a huge, obviously, selling point for the university themselves, right? Like, that's the push, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think all the universities we work with currently are, no matter which area and field they're in, whether it's a business school or, for example, like Georgetown Masters of Foreign Services, like these are the cream of the crop programs. And so for them, rankings do matter, right? So their KPIs are students getting placed, right? So usually 3 months after graduation, are they getting decent salaries and working for great companies, right? So these are things they look at. So I think for them, trying to find something that actually helps the students get to that next level is really important, right? And what we found also is all these schools really do nudge students to build relationships, but there wasn't something out there that really encouraged that. And so we were trying to find, you know, fill in that need.
So now that you've been in this world for a little while, right? Like this has been your main focus. What kind of insights or what kind of data points are you taking away from a lot of the stuff that's coming through to you guys? Like, for example, you know, career paths, right? Like, are you guys able to start now seeing data about like, okay, there's a tremendous amount of students that are studying X, Y, and Z that are going into this career path versus we need more going, you know, into something else. Like, I'm just thinking just kind of about our profession in general, like from CPAs, right? Like, there's this huge shortage of accountants. There's a lot of people retiring, not enough people studying, you know, are those some kinds of data points and insights that you guys are starting to get out of this and starting to see how people are thinking?
Yeah, for sure. So we can see what companies are looking at, you know, jobs looking at, how many people they're reaching out to at these companies. And I do think, as you said, I think 10 years ago, accounting was a really hot job. It's starting to change now. I mean, I think people are looking for like these sexy tech kind of jobs. And so, for example, accounting firms are one of the big ones that are like, hey, we're trying to hire tens of thousands of students and we can't find them. We can't get them, right? So we are seeing this, right? And we're seeing sort of the shift into certain areas where students do get excited about. But we also get some interesting insights. And so students are actually using email and LinkedIn through GrooOS. We're also able to say, okay, probably got a job at, you know, Accenture. Okay. He actually reached out to 5 people there. It took over 50 emails back and forth. And you can also say, start seeing this correlation that people that land great jobs, there is a lot of communication that goes back and forth before they're getting the offer, which is also a really interesting insight we see.
That's pretty cool. So I want to talk a little bit about, you grew up in the US, right? Like, you went to high school, you went to, did your undergrad, right? In the
Alabama.
US, right?
Yep.
So, and now you're living in Europe. And are you Spanish by background?
My dad was originally from Mexico. So moved to the US in the 80s, chasing my mom. So my mom studied abroad, okay, in Mexico, and my dad chased her back to Alabama. Yeah, yeah.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So, but kind of interesting because you also have this, like, if I think about myself for a minute, or probably the prototypical, let's just say, we'll call it US student, right? We, I think of the school, you know, to career path, you know, in a very specific way that I would characterize as maybe very American, right? Is that different abroad? Like, is the path from, you know, high school to university to, you know, your first job and everything, is that different in, you know, different parts of the world? And you're getting exposure to this, obviously, building the company abroad, but also, you know, having ties into the US.
Yeah. No, I think from that sense, it's pretty similar where, you know, you usually for graduating high school, most likely going to college. I mean, of course, you see the differences now where, you know, you might have a public school university in Europe. It's actually public and it's like free, right? This is very different than, I think, when Europeans, you say, oh, I went to Alabama and it costs, you know, $25,000 a year. They're like, I thought it's a public school. So that is one of the big differences, right? So I think access to higher education is a little bit more available from that standpoint. But no, it's usually that. I do think in Europe in general, a lot of students do bachelor's and master's. It's more common to do both. So this is something right after, right? So you do maybe, you know, bachelor's and immediately a master's in finance, and then you go work. So this is something more common. But I think most of the structure is very different. I think MBAs are not as common as in the US from a corporate standpoint. But now it's becoming much more common also in Europe, sort of the NDA structure as well.
Are you seeing a lot of the students that are coming out of the European universities wanting to come over to the US, or are they primarily getting placed with companies and looking for jobs, you know, where they're from, or, you know, in Europe or whatever country they're in at that time?
What I see is a lot of students would love to go work in the US. I mean, yeah, I'm biased American, so I think it's a good place to work, but salaries are much higher in the US, more or less, right? I mean, it's definitely, there are some cost of living things that are also higher. All in, I think that if you're, you know, smart, young, driven person coming to the US, you have a lot of opportunity. So I definitely see that. But the other side of that, the visa requirements and the rules around it, it's almost impossible. So unless you're working for a corporate for a couple of years before, like let's say back to the, you know, the Accenture example, you work for Accenture and then after 2 years, you try to transfer to the US. But if you don't do that, it's really, really hard. But I think the other thing that I'm seeing is like there are some really good hubs. Like Barcelona is one of them here, Berlin, Amsterdam. I mean, there's some cities that are really becoming strong hubs for growth, for startups. Capital is starting to come in. So there are some that are really growing. But for sure, I think a lot of students think about studying in the US also to be able to stay for a couple of years afterwards.
I want to talk a little bit about, so going back into your background, so you were an investment banker, right? You were with BB&T, I think, for a bit.
BBVA.
Yeah, BBVA, yeah. Okay. So you're BBVA, you're in the iBanking world. How long were you doing that for again?
So I was doing that for almost 7 years. So I was doing higher education and for-profit, not-for-profit healthcare, sort of bond issuances for about six and a half years before the MBA.
So how much has that experience, have those experiences prepared you for what you're doing now?
You know, it's funny. So that, and also I also had a few restaurants that I was managing and owning. I think those two experiences, sometimes you don't realize what you're going to get out of them until later in life, right? And so I think for me, what I became really great at is people and understanding people and working with people and understanding what makes people tick, not tick, all these things, right? From different angles, right? Restaurants, it was, how do you motivate someone to make sure they're at the shift in time? Can you keep people there for long periods of time? Can you train someone up from dishwasher to the sous chef, right? There's different levels. And then also in banking, I was working with a lot of really, really important customers, right? For us, it was like the city of Birmingham, right? These kind of projects, UAB, all the way to big, even some big deals with like some of the biggest charter schools in the country down in Miami, right? So I was working with different institutions all across, and you're working with really influential people and trying to understand them, build relationships with them. I realized this just as important now becoming a startup founder with building relationships with building a team, right? I mean, you realize early on with a startup, it's all about recruiting, right? Can you recruit a great team? Can you build a good team? Really important. Can you get, you know, people that will fund you and believe in you? Also really, really important, right? Can you then get customers, right? I mean, you have to think about from a startup standpoint, in the very beginning, you're selling an idea, right? And I think sometimes if you're selling to another startup, it's a bit easier. Like, hey, listen, you're a startup, I'm a startup. Come on, let's do it, right? But we were selling to enterprise customers, right? I mean, if you think about some of these universities, they're the biggest universities in the world, right? And we had to get them on board with what we're doing, believing with what we're doing and really partnering with them. And this all came back to my time as a banker and as a restaurant owner for sure.
What about managing investors? So like that's another thing, especially about being a startup funder. I think, you know, probably a very a critical piece. Obviously, there's a lot of hats you have to wear. There's a lot of things that you have to do right. You have to get a lot of excitement behind it. And ultimately, you got to be a great leader. But at the end of the day, bringing outside capital in, what's that like? And how much responsibility do you feel? And you know, even the first check, let's say, I mean, there's got to be some nerves. It's, you know, sometimes that can also be a bit scary.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, I think one important thing is having a team. So my co-founder, Max Stengel, also did the MBA with me. We were like a yin and yang. We're both, and we have some in the middle that we're great at. So I'm really good at storytelling, getting in front of people, building these relationships. But he also has a lot of experience in investments, and especially early stage. So we can also really work together on this. But for sure, I mean, I think when someone, especially early stage, the people are really investing in you, right? I mean, a lot of times you don't have much revenue, if at any yet. You're just getting things going. So when you see those checks coming in from people that you really think highly of, so one of our core investors is, as I mentioned, Jan Brinkman. You know, this guy believed in me since the very beginning, and you don't want to let these people down either, right? So it's also, you feel a bit of pressure on it, but I don't think you ever get this far unless you really believe in what you're doing. So I think another aspect is you have to really believe in what you're doing, believe in the team that you have. And if you do that, you know, the investors are going to be excited about it. And the other part is I think same thing as from banking, is just communicating really well with them, right? What's the latest? What's going on? But at an early stage, I see them as part of the team, right? They, all of them have an amazing experience working with startups and companies. They've been doing it for years. Most of them build companies themselves. So I like to give them as much information as we can. Good, bad, ugly, doesn't matter, because they're there to help, right? And we see that.
That's a good point. So, and it's funny, I've got a little bit of an experience kind of similar to this where, you know, pretty recently we were just under contract to purchase another firm that we're going to roll up. And, you know, we had actually a client of ours that is in an adjacent space and has some of the similar backgrounds, but they believed in us and they kind of came in and, you know, gave us a commitment to, you know, to kind of go after this. But the whole time, and I think of these folks, you know, very highly, especially because of the backgrounds that they, you know, came from, but the amount of questions that I would ask them and get their opinions on things. And I still do it, you know, really kind of leaning on their wisdom and their experiences to, you know, they've gone before us and done a lot of, you know, great things. How much of that, you know, are do you see yourself doing, like with some of your investors or some of your advisors, where you are really leaning on them for advice and asking them a lot of questions?
Yeah, I mean, all the time. I mean, I think that's the blessing. We really brought in a really great crew, and because of that, they've all done it before. I mean, just like 2 weeks ago, we had a call with Marvin Humberg, one of our investors, young guy, probably not too much older than us or around the same age as us, already sold his first company. And he's been there, right? So just talking through with him, thinking about different areas, different plans, it's really, really powerful. So it's one of those things, having those, it's great. But it's also like any other relationship, you have to foster it and you have to keep them. Again, I think one of the things about is communicating. If they don't know what's going on, they're not going to be able to help you, right? So it's trying to find this cadence of making sure they know what's, you know, happening, what's the latest, what's going on. And so we really try to put a lot of time and effort too, just giving them, you know, straightforward, honest updates of what's happening so they can provide those insights. Because I also know friends that are starting companies and they don't even send updates. They don't even reach out. It's hard to have a conversation or get any kind of help if you're not communicating.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk a little bit about, so in the startup environment, and you know, a lot of people talk about product market fit and, you know, figuring out, you know, okay, well, am I onto something here? Have I found something? Do I have some momentum? And a lot of times you'll find folks that they have to make pivots. You know, they're kind of on the right path and like, oh, we got to tweak this. You know, sometimes it's a complete 180 from where they started. And a lot of times it's great outcomes too. You know, they started something that's nowhere near what they finished, you know, where they finished, right? How much of CareerOS today would you say is exactly how you envisioned it back on day one?
So, you know, it's funny probably you ask, because I think that a lot of times we mystify building a startup, right? We sort of sometimes think about like, hey, you have to, you know, you're Mark Zuckerberg, you're drawing on the window, thinking about this amazing idea. And then you're, you know, you're the one that builds it. And before you know it, you know, the whole Harvard EDU is using, okay. I think this a lot of times it's like a fairy tale, right? The other side of that is, hey, are there frameworks to actually go about creating a company, right? So in the very beginning, before we even said, let's go all in, we said, can we actually talk to who would be our customers, right? And so what we did was we said, okay, let's get the list of the top 100 schools that we can find, and let's reach out to the decision makers of these schools or people we can talk to and see, do we think that we could even have a product that we'd sell? What is their feedback? What are their pain points? What's going on? And we did the same thing with students. We talked to over 1,000 students, right? So our thought was, yeah, we have an idea, but how can we already validate that before building a single line of code, right? So in the early stages, we built like this really shitty Figma prototype, right? Before we ever did anything else, and we would just talk to people. Hey, we're thinking about this. Hey, what do you struggle with? And we did this in the very beginning. And then we got the prototype a little bit better before we ever wrote a line of code. And then we'd go back to these same individuals and say, hey, what about now? What are you thinking? What is this and that? And we would do that as many times as possibly could, as fast as we could, right? And so we were already validating before we even built a product or shipped a product. And so I don't think that you have to build a company, do all the things before you can validate something. You can do it early. So I think we did do this really, really well early on. It's just talking to customers, right? And hearing from them. And then we got positive feedback of them. And then we said, okay, maybe some of them would even be our first, let's call it development partners, like Isade, ESMT Berlin, like I mentioned, and took them and we kept listening, right? So I call this like a spinning wheel, right? It's okay, you have the customers on the top, right? You have product, right? And like shipping it. The quicker you can get this, so you say, okay, here's an idea, ship it, go back to the customer, get feedback and do it again. The quicker you and your team can do this, the faster you can try to find the magic product market fit, right? And this is something we did even before we even wrote the first line of code.
Yeah, that feedback loop is so important. We just launched, or we're in the process of launching a new service line, and we thought we nailed it right at the beginning. We got it off to somebody and we got some really good feedback, and you know, all of a sudden we're iterating and making changes. That feedback loop is so important. And the number of people that are willing to give it to you, you know, I think early on you don't think so, but especially if you have something that is going to be valuable and something that they want, that the feedback is there for you, which is great.
Well, I think also just being upfront and honest about it, like we would say, like, hey, we're doing something new. We're a bit crazy. We would love to be a development partnership with you guys. Hey, you know, there's a pain here. If you give us feedback, we're going to take it and we're going to continue making something powerful. And we really did that, right? And I think this is also being very open about it with your customers, even in the very beginning.
Up to this point, you've been at it now for, you know, a few years. What's been your biggest pain point so far? Have you had any moments where you and Max were like, oh man, we don't know what's going to happen next. We think it's going to work out. It's all going to be fine. You know, or do you really feel like, you know, even though of course there's always stress, it's always, you know, pressure and you have that vision that you're always, let's say, fighting for and you have that North Star that you're going to, but have you guys had any of those like really, you know, harsh critical moments where you're like, oh man, I don't know what's going to come next?
I think right now we've been on a good path, which is fortunate to say. So knock on wood that it continues. I mean, every day it's a grind, yeah. Right? I mean, I look at it like, you know, I used to do a bit of like Ironman kind of training and races. It's sort of like this. You have to know that it's a journey, right? And you can't expect it just to be, it's sort of like, okay, you got to keep moving up, but it's going to be like this, right? Every day. And I think we really understand that and we embrace it, that it's not going to be like this fairy tale all the time, just perfect. But no, I mean, I think we've enjoyed it. And there hasn't been, I think, this moment, again, don't want to jinx it, that has been like, well, okay, like a slap in the face yet. We try to, I mean, one of the things we do every couple of months is we'll actually identify what are our top 10 risks, right? Well, the whole leadership team comes together. We talk about them. We then try to put plans in place for each thing. So we try to also think about what are the worst things that could happen, right? And how do we prepare for them? And so we actively try to think about these things. But no, I mean, I think right now it's just the grind. I mean, there's good days, there's bad days. I mean, sometimes there's tension. I also think in the startup space, if there's no tension, then there's a problem, right? You should be butting heads a bit. You should be challenging each other. And so we definitely do that. And so there's definitely better weeks than not, but I think we're all sort of aligned on pushing really hard. And I think the other thing too is, I mean, we're all driven by helping students. I mean, all right, at the end of the day, if what we do works and works really well, it's going to help students land really great jobs and careers that they're probably going to be a lot happier about than they were before using CareerOS. So also we have this nice little nudge that drives us every day too.
So something that I think I've actually asked you before back when we talked, you, me, and Alex, and I asked you about the technical abilities of building a tech startup, right? Your background is in banking, and this was something, and I recently asked this question to somebody that we had on that's building an AI product that I absolutely love, but he doesn't have a tech background. He doesn't write code, right? Like that's not his background. And early in my career, I think I was probably very naive to this, but these are the things that you learn as you grow and you ask questions, you're curious. And it's also the importance of a team, but your background has nothing to do with really tech, writing code, right? And there, you know, you mentioned earlier that, you know, you and Max having the yin and the yang and everything, right? How your role in the company and how much of what you know and how you've developed, let's say, within your career and as a founder and everything, how much have you had to actually rely on, man, I really need to understand the technical components of this versus, you know, I just have enough vision. I understand enough how it works and I can, you know, chart a path forward, you know, with this, right? I think there's a lot of people, especially maybe early on in their careers that think, oh man, maybe I chose the wrong career path because I really want to do this, but I have no expertise in this. And how can I go figure this out? Do I actually really need to?
I think the important thing around it is one, realizing what skills do you have, right? And there probably are certain skills that you can, you know, lead a startup with, probably something you can't. There's something you probably build a great software product with that you can't, right? So I think first is identifying where your strengths and weaknesses are. And I think we did that early on, right? It was like, what are our strengths and weaknesses are? Where are our gaps? And can we build a really great founding team around that? So, you know, it was me, Max, Dan, Alexi, you know, me really big on the sales, storytelling, recruiting these efforts. Max really good on product, operations, all these items. And then Alexi and Dan, amazing on the technical side of things. So I think the thing is you find a team that are really good at certain things, and then you have to trust and depend on each other to execute on what you're really good at, right? Because I think early on a startup, you're all players, right? You're not, I mean, maybe you, now we're becoming a little bit more coaches, but you're all players and you need to be A-plus players all the time, right? And then and same thing, right? Like, I mean, you play baseball forever. If you have your slugger up, you know, third up to bat, you know, you're not going to be yelling from the dugout, hey man, like keep your eye on the ball. You're going to trust him to go out and do his thing, you know? And I think this is the same thing, right? And if you can't do that, then I think that's the bigger problem.
Something that always stuck with me, something that sticks with me today. So when I worked at Goldman, there was a guy that I worked with whose father was the CEO of a large company. And I remember asking him, I said, what was your dad's, you know, best trait or biggest skill that you saw, you know, as a successful, you know, CEO? And the response that he gave me, which has always stuck with me, was that it wasn't that he was good at like any one thing. It was about bringing people together and the right people together. It was all about identifying what skill sets were needed in certain roles and making sure they all worked really well together. And that's what it was about for him.
Without a doubt. I mean, bring people on that are better than you, right? Yeah. This is what I think you should do.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the hottest topic, you know, for the last few years now, AI. You're in the tech space. You guys are building out this software platform, this career engine. Are you guys using AI? How do you think about AI? Obviously, I'm sure you are. And you're you know, probably starting to think about, okay, how do we utilize it in different ways within our software platform? So how are you thinking about AI?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's different ways people look at it in the industry. I think some people are creating like AI first kind of companies, right? Where it's at, that's all they're doing is AI on the side. And that can be, I think, great. I mean, we're also seeing already with like, you know, LLMs, pricings are going down. It's becoming like a, you know, brutal war out there for it. I think it's only going to keep going down, right? So I think we're going to see prices drop a lot and it's already, the costs are dropping. So the other side is, how do you incorporate AI in what you do? And are you doing that? And yeah, we do it. We use it for so many things within our product and we're going to continue doing that, but we don't see it as as saying, okay, this should be, you know, all you do is AI. No, it's, can we use that to make the experience better for the users, right? And I think in that sense, 100% you can. There's all kinds of stuff you can do. We work it in with prompts throughout all the software to give students a better experience. We're going to be doing that for the universities as well. And so this is really where we see the value is making, already having a great experience and then making it even better with AI.
That makes sense. And for the students that are on your platform and the students that are coming out into the you know, workforce now, what are you seeing as like the one career, like maybe a discipline or subject matter that they are most interested in? Many of them think, obviously, I think at that age too, you're always kind of thinking about like, okay, where do I have the most upside, right? What are you guys seeing?
I think for early careers, it's a bit different. I think now a lot of people look at like the benefits they get, not just the work itself, right? And so I think we're seeing that a bit more.
Oh, that's interesting.
You know, I think like when we first started, a lot of times we didn't even look at a vacation day or the benefits. It was just like you knew you were going to go work and probably work a lot until who knows how many years fast forward, right? And so I think a bit of that comes in. So I do think that now a lot will look at maybe companies that are more hybrid or remote first or these things, and that might even become more important than the actual functional role that they're doing, right? And so I do think there's a bit of this that happens. Yeah. So I see some of that, but I do think the roles that are coming in, I mean, we see a lot of people, of course, like consulting, right? Looking for like the big three, McKinsey, Bain, BCG. These are still hot companies, the tech companies that I think the other side of that is like consumer-ish kind of tech facing companies. So like Apple, right? We all have an iPhone in our hand. Of course, this is a hot company because they are always thinking about it. They're always using it. And so I think some of these like consumer kind of tech brands are huge as well. The ones that people use every day, or even like a ChatGPT. You're using that, you're thinking about them, and you're like, oh, maybe this would be pretty cool to work there.
Yeah, the whatever is the hottest, sexiest company, I guess, at the given time. That's interesting, though, that you say that, you know, most of them are looking at benefits and, you know, what a company is maybe offering them, and they're probably envisioning, okay, well, what would life look like? And I guess stability probably still plays a pretty big role in that, too.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, we tell even students that use CareerWise the same thing, like focus on companies, not jobs, like figure out where you actually want to work, why you want to work there, and then decide how to get in, right?
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Marcus, I appreciate you coming on. This has been awesome. Yeah. I'm wishing you the best of luck, loving everything that I'm seeing, especially all the content that you guys are putting out on LinkedIn. And I have no doubt that you guys are going to be huge, especially with the force you guys have behind you.
Let's see. I think we'll have some exciting stuff here in the near future. So be on the lookout.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, man. Well, it was great catching up, and I'll talk to you soon.
See you, man.
See you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Roads and Riches podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please consider liking, subscribing, commenting. Let us know how we're doing. And if you're an individual or a business that's in need of accounting services, maybe you're in the market for a new CPA, whether it be tax, accounting, fractional CFO services for your business, or transaction advisory services if you're contemplating a transaction, you should consider using Alpine Mar, the CPA firm that's redefining the accounting industry. You can head on over to alpinemar.com or roadsandriches.com to learn more about us and find a contact form to get in touch. Find out if we can be a good fit for you. We'll see you next time on the Roads and Riches podcast.